Radio Chelly Effect is sponsored by WallStreetWindow.com and listeners like you.
And now the most underrated voice in all media, Chuck O'Chelly.
Hello, everybody. This is Nature Boy, and we're having some technical difficulties down there in the great state of Georgia. You know, they do have the elections coming up there, and the internet provider, I will not release the name because that would not be fair, plus liability issues, is not working well for Mr. Chuck, so you're going to have to hear my voice tonight on the podcast. I'm Nature Boy, and I'm happy to be here and fill in for the great Chuck, and if we can get him on the line, we're going to get him on the line. But tonight we have a fantastic guest, a longtime friend of the podcast. He's a very wise man from down under, as Chuck likes to call Oceania, Australia. He's a good old Aussie named Carl and has one of the best quintessential Australian voices I have ever heard in my life. And it's my pleasure to welcome Mr. Carl to the show. Carl, how are you doing tonight?
Mate, I'm very blown away by your introduction. That's very nice of you. You say the nicest things. So thank you very much. It's a pleasure to be on Chuck's show, even if Chuck can't be on it.
I know.
Just as good, mate.
Yeah, he's a good man. He's an interesting guy. And first of all, so basically everybody kind of knows who I am. Give our listeners a quick little introduction on who Mr. Carl Lieberg is. Liebold, excuse me.
And last name's always a hard one.
I know, and I'm very bad at names. Carl, who you are, what you're doing, and what you've been up to.
Cool. All right. Well, I'm a broadcast professional from Australia. I've been 40 years in radio and probably 20 of those in television as well, all behind-the-scenes sort of stuff, nothing on camera or doing anything remotely star-like, just voiceovers and production and making stuff. But since this whole COVID thing happened, I've taken a stance where I don't sort of believe in much of it. And I've created a show online called The Voice of Freedom. That is predominantly focused on Australian issues or how we're dealing with things here in this country. But increasingly, how we deal with things in this country relates entirely to how you guys are dealing with things in your country. So I'm doing a series of shows around Australia where I travel around, pull up somewhere, go in and put an event on, people come in, have a bit of a listen, we have a good chat, we swap information, we learn things, and we're, at the moment, really focused on building communities, local communities. One of the biggest problems that we've identified in Australia, and I'm pretty confident that it's a similar problem in America, is the people we are electing to govern are not governing for the people, they are governing for themselves. Mm-hmm. So The Voice of Freedom and quite a few others have taken the stance that we need to elect new people to represent us. We need to have people who the community trusts. And there's probably an argument to say that those people who've been, you know, elected year after year after year after year have the people's trust. But the fact of the matter is they don't. The people in many cases here in Australia are just lazy and they'll vote for the incumbent. I think that happens a fair bit in America.
It really does.
We've got significant issues here with nobody trusts the count. And I dare say that's the issue facing America at the moment. Yeah. In fact, this week, I can tell you that in Australia we are paused for something to happen this week from America. It has to be a trigger for the world this week in America because those midterm elections that you guys are having, mm-hmm. you can't have those. But they can't go ahead until what happened in 2020 is sorted out. And
take a pause for a second. What do you mean by what you just said? Can you clarify that just a little bit?
I 100% believe the 2020 presidential election was stolen.
Okay, cool. And our listeners out there are fully aware of this. We have very intelligent people listening to our show.
Yeah.
And me, that's an interesting subject because I love quotes. That's one of my favorite things from favorite people, or from famous people, not favorite people. And one of them that I've always loved is from Franklin Delano Roosevelt. And he said, presidents are selected, not elected. And when you go back into the history of our elections and really dig down deep, you find there's a lot of truth to what he said. And
yes,
now I think it's almost a revelation of the method to show to the mass public that this is how it's really run. And it's still peeling itself up out like an onion, trying to get to the core. And it hasn't gotten to the core yet, but a couple really thick layers are being revealed. And we're seeing that a lot in our country. And with our current administration in the last 2 years of the clown show, excuse me, of the Biden, I don't know where I am, I'm mentally deficient. And I have to wear depends because I crap my pants when I'm meeting with the Pope. That, Mr. Biden, you know, when anybody comes up and says the typical game, every time we have an election, it's always the other side says it's stolen. You have Hillary Clinton saying that it was Putin that stole the election from the Democrats and put the devil Trump.
Yeah.
You have the Republicans saying the same thing about Biden. But let me get back to your initial point. I find it very suspect that Joe Biden had the greatest number of votes out of any president in history. A man who could not even fill up a drive-in theater while Trump was filling up stadiums and people are coming around the corner. And think about this from a Democrat side. Obama did the same thing. Obama would speak and people would fill up stadiums and be around the corner. And you're telling me from a Democrat's perspective, that guy got more votes than Obama? When it comes to Democrats, Obama was, excuse me, don't strike me down, Lord, the second coming of Christ.
Well, I think it's probably the other side of that coin, mate, just between you, me, and the gatepost.
I do too.
Some of the things that happened during the Obama administration are beyond terrible, beyond horrifying, and we have evidence. So that's the other thing about the 2020 election. We have the evidence. We know exactly where the votes went. Now, whether or not that is open news in America, and I doubt that it is, but I can tell you exactly how they stole the votes, where they were stolen, what satellite systems were used, how the Vatican was involved, how the Mossad were involved, and how they reinserted count back into the live national vote count via satellite, as well as all the multiple vote counting that went on, and then the suitcases full of Chinese printed ballots that were run through the machines as well. Wow. I'm not sure if you're aware, but we know that every one of the American ballots had a non-radioactive isotope or a trackable dot on it, and the military were in charge of the election. Donald Trump's executive order of September 12, 2018, put two or three new agencies into operation. And those agencies, it was like he was a fortune teller. He predicted that those agencies would be required, and should they be required, they would come into action, come alive on the 3rd of November 2020 at midnight.
Okay.
I believe those are the executive orders that set the military up to take a very interesting view of the election. They recorded everything. They found out what happened. I'm not even completely sure that this election that you've got coming up, these midterms, it's going to be very interesting how they play out. Because if my way of thinking here is you can't have them until you've sorted out 2020, but maybe they have sorted this out. Maybe they've stopped the corruption. Maybe they've removed the Dominion voting machines. Maybe they've removed the corrupt people in the electoral system. And this time you might actually get a fair and free election.
No.
That being the case,
if I might
your
interrupt,
Republicans just are going to run wild.
Well, you drop some serious like information bombs on us here really quick. Now, as far as the Dominion voting, nothing I have seen so far, and keep in mind that's one man's opinion, is there going to be any change with that? There might be some small local areas that are going back to paper ballots, but everybody knows, well, I can't say everybody knows because most people don't, but people that are in the know that the black box voting machines are easily hackable. And a great example that I love is there was a white hat hackers convention. And one of the things they had set up is a, I don't know if it was Dominion or who made it, a voting system that was set up just like the elections. And the contest was who can hack it first. And it was hacked, I believe, by an 11-year-old school girl in 10 minutes.
Yeah, there you go.
And if that can happen, right, at a white hacker's, that says that we have serious vulnerabilities in our election system. When it comes back to did Trump win, did Biden win, I can't say that because I don't have definitive facts, but what I do know, just common sense says, that when sleepy, creepy Uncle Joe gets the most votes out of any president, there's some monkeying and some monkey business going on behind the scenes we're not told about. And when you start looking behind the scenes and digging down into the local news, you find out things like in Georgia, there were definite issues. Let's just leave it at that. We don't want to be canceled with the count. And now in Pennsylvania, there was a recent, I think it was even made it to the Supreme Court, about accepting ballots that have no dates, man. There's no date stamp. It's just like, here's a ballot. Well, when was it submitted? Well, there's no date stamp, but we don't need it because it's legal. And it's just like, excuse me, a blind man can see. That is just open. Let's be conservative for corruption.
I think you've hit the nail on the head. There is such corruption at every level of government. And that is not just in your country. That is in our country as well. We are sick and tired of it. In fact, there is a state election coming up here in a couple of weeks' time, Victoria, which we call the head of the snake down here, the head of the deep state. The state of Victoria, and the little Hitler that's running that state is a fellow called Dan Andrews. Now, having just spent better part of 2 weeks in Victoria talking to people who've survived the harshest lockdowns in the world, the harshest rules in the world over the last 3 years, I can tell you that the people in Melbourne, Victoria, Australia are traumatized. They are deeply traumatized by what they've been subjected to. Yeah. They've had their own police force shooting rubber bullets at them on the streets while they're protesting. Mm-hmm. It has really changed the Australian psyche, well, particularly the Victorian psyche, but that has had a wider effect on the populace of Australia. And part of what the Voice of Freedom is doing is giving those people their voice. I go out into their town. If they want to say something, I give them a microphone. They can say it. We'll talk about it and try and talk the issues through. What we are focused on doing, though, is building communities and being able to find leaders within those communities that we can raise up to represent us in the future, so that we have a new breed of independent politicians, not parties, but independent politicians representing the people. That is the only way we're going to be able to move forward as far as we can see. I think America would do well to follow the same thing. We've forgotten how to be neighbours. We've forgotten how to be friends with each other. All we see is division. And that's what they've made for us, right? They have designed this so that we are always divided.
It's in my
everything that we do.
It's my
because
belief.
It keeps us from looking at the truth.
It's my belief that we are, as a population, are being systematically divided. You know, the old saying, a nation divided is a nation conquered. And the technology of social engineering has gotten so unbelievably advanced. And the technology has gotten to the point where it's dividing us at a molecular level. And I think the whole COVID-19 exercise, if you will, is a great example of that. It's divided families. It's like the Civil War divided families in the 1800s. Today, old friends won't speak to each other because one person decided to get a medical procedure and another did not.
I know. It's very sad, isn't it?
It's very sad. So I like the idea about what you're doing in Australia. I really want to focus this more on what's going on in Australia and not our country, because all of our listeners know exactly what's going on here. But I love the idea of getting back to local politics, local solutions, and trying to at best get the truth out about what's really going on at a global level that's keeping us divided and ultimately repressed. And if we don't change this, we will be put into a system that will be global in nature and unable to escape. And if you want an example of what that system could look like now, just go look at the social credit scoring in China and what's going on with China.
Yep.
Well, here's a recent example I just heard about. In China's Disneyland, they had one person test positive. They locked the whole park down.
I heard that they had 10 people test positive at an Apple production facility in China, 200,000 people. Mm-hmm. In that Apple production facility, they locked down the whole facility and then locked down the wider region. 1.8 million people locked down because of what I think is now about 42 cases of a cold.
If you want,
There's nothing in this COVID thing.
Yeah, it's just an example of control. When it first happened a few years ago, my first thing is, oh my God, this is more about power and control at a global level than it is about any virus or any health issue that we have as a people.
Yeah, all about control.
Yeah.
All about control.
All about control.
We need to fight that, folks. Otherwise, we are going to remain the slaves that we are. I mean, I don't want to spin your listeners out too much, but
they got a good heart.
I hope a lot of them are aware that they have a CQV trust that they got when they were born.
If you could just back up a little bit for our listeners, what's a CQV trust?
CQV trust is you've heard of the saying, your birthright or you're worth your weight in gold.
Mm-hmm.
So your birthright is a large amount of gold that is essentially put aside in your name for you in trust at your birth. When you sign a birth certificate, you are helping them create what we call the straw man. And if you notice, all your big bills, all your official mail will come to you addressed in capital letters. Okay, your name, yes, all in capital letters.
Yeah, any legal document comes in capital letters.
That's because you have been capitalized. Mm-hmm. Okay? So your birth certificate is essentially a share certificate. They trade birth certificates through the stock market.
Yeah.
It's in depth. Much longer than we have here to try and describe.
We don't have time.
How the elites work.
And that's true because...
So our straw man, mm-hmm, the straw man that is created when you sign the birth certificate, mm-hmm, that is the tool that they administer. Like in court, if you go to court, you stand up and they say, Nature Boy, is that you? And you say, yes, you've automatically entered into a contract with them. Courts are not courts in the way that you think of them. Courts are merely trust hearings. They are administering your CQV trust. And if you turn up at the court and you say, yes, that is me, when they call out their name, your name, they are administering your capitalized person, if you like, the straw man, and they need you to stand up in court and represent it. Hmm. Right? They double dip on your CQV trust as well. So every bill you get from utilities and rates and all that sort of stuff is already paid out of your CQV trust. These companies are just double dipping and having you pay them again. And we can prove this.
Let me just kind of stop you here for a second here. That's pretty interesting. And as far as what you're talking about, the capitalization and stuff like that, Jordan Maxwell said very similar things about the actual court system. And then when he gets into entomology of how you get things like the bench, the court, the currency, you know, the flow of cash when it comes back to maritime law, which is another discussion for a different day, is pretty interesting. Now, is there anything that you have that maybe you could send that would back this up a little bit? Because this, even though I know you know what you're talking about, this is no dispute on you. For new listeners or people who are new to these ideas, these things sound almost outlandish, at least. Does that make sense?
Yep. Yeah. Sure does. I'm just having a bit of a Google at the moment.
There's something we could throw in the show notes. A few things we could do. So if people are curious, they can do their own research.
What I'll do, Dave, is I'll paste something up in our chat.
Okay.
Sure. This is a link. If you want to share that link, it's to a YouTube video that says Meet Your Straw Man. And it will explain to you exactly how the straw man works. Now, something that people, and I know people love this story. You remember the Wizard of Oz?
Oh, who doesn't?
Well, the Wizard of Oz is all about what's going on in the world right now, believe it or not.
I believe it. I believe it. There's a lot of metaphors.
There is a straw man. There is a straw man in the Wizard of Oz. Mm-hmm. There is a cowardly lion, mm-hmm, not courageous. He's trying to be courageous. And there is a tin man looking for a heart. All of this is, believe it or not, very linked into the deep state. And the whole the Wizard of Oz behind the curtain, just an old man pulling levers, that's what's happening here. Mm-hmm. The same kind of deal. We all think the world is one thing, and it is not. It is a very different thing. We've just been led by the people we trusted to represent us. Mm-hmm. They've been bought off, bribed,
blackmailed.
Blackmailed, inducted into the deep state, mm-hmm, and to a point where they can't get out of it if they wanted to. And we are now at the cusp of the great cull. The elites want to clean out the world population, the useless eaters.
Yes,
just leave enough to remain useful slaves and for the elites.
As outlandish as this might sound to our listeners, this is not. These global elites, they have written books about it. They hold conferences about population reduction.
Yeah.
They hold TED Talks. Go out there and look at Bill Gates' little TED Talk about zero. We have to get the world to carbon neutral. And look at one of the variables in there. It is P, called people. But as he said, but that we can't talk about that because those are the death panels with his little sinister laugh.
Yeah.
You have people from Ehrlich with a population bomb, from all these high-level people talking about depopulation. And these, they're not holding conferences just to boost their egos. These are serious people with serious agendas, with serious power. And I think, and I cannot say for sure because I'm one dumbass sitting in California with a microphone, but with that being said, I think the great culling might have begun with the recent increase in all-cause mortalities, according to the insurance companies, with 40% increase in 2021, where a 10% increase is a 1 in 200 year event, and that's according to the CEO of American One Insurance. And anybody can go out there and look at the video. Just Google it. Might have to do it, but it's out there in a Zoom call with other people of his company saying, yeah, this is what we're seeing. And that's one example, man. I know of people who have dropped dead. Okay. Other people who have these cancers that are just super aggressive, that have come out of nowhere or have been in remission, that are coming out. You look
go straight to stage four.
Just go out and look at the soccer players dropping dead. Excuse me, football players for us. You know, for everybody else besides us Americans.
It's happening here too. And one of our greatest Australian sporting heroes dropped dead in Thailand. Mm-hmm. He was also one of the big faces on TV for getting jabbed.
Well,
so,
you know, in all fairness, one, when you're looking at it from an objective standpoint, at least from my opinion, is that the first thing that you do is you look at what changed in the environment. And you have to seriously look at it, if anything, to check it off the list, to try to find
the medical
out what's
types,
going on.
The medical types that you go to try and check up are fudging all the information you can access.
Yes.
You're getting, you know, governments, state and federal, issuing statements saying, you know, this is all good for you, this is all great, go forth, get the next jab. It's crap. It's lies.
It's garbage.
There is nothing good for you. I can tell you from personal experience, someone very, very close to me is an insulin-dependent diabetic. She was forced, coerced into getting jabbed so that she could get a job and keep her house. Now she is in hospital right now suffering from the worst case of scabies that the doctors in Queensland have ever seen. Now, she didn't get the scabies from anywhere or anyone or anything. It just broke out of her body after a third shot.
Now, is scabies the same thing as shingles?
Very similar, I think, yeah.
Very, very
similar.
So
scabies and shingles are both side effects, known side effects.
Viruses that are known to be within the body but yet tend to be remissive.
Dormant,
exactly. It's funny you say that because I know of three of my personal friends that got shingles after getting the shot.
Yep, there you go.
And
that's how it works.
I've never, you know, said, was it because of the boop, the shot? Because, man, I'm not going to ask you about medical information, but it just makes me suspicious. It's like, that's interesting timing that, you know, one of them, I have to say, has had shingles pre-shot, pre-jab time. Two of them have not.
Yeah, look, that can be the case. But the fact of the matter is, shingles is an autoimmune deficiency disease.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yes.
So if you have already a suppressed autoimmune system, then getting jabbed is going to continually and further depress that system.
Yes.
So anything that your immune system was able to hang, like to push back and stop getting a hold of you, all those defenses are being taken down by the jab. So that whatever is inside you that wants to attack you can, and your body isn't fighting back. Because that's what this jab has done. It's changed the way that your body sees antibodies or sees particles in things in it that are wrong, and it doesn't fight them. You know, ordinarily we know that it, up until, you know, some years ago, if you got a taste of something, it gave you a form of immunity from it.
Right.
In most cases.
Well, that was the original, if I might interject, that's the original definition. They had to change the definition of a vaccine to make it fit the new gene therapy treatment.
Yep. They've changed the meaning of the word mandate. Mandate used to mean that you had to give your permission and your consent to whatever they wanted you to do. But now, if you go and Google mandate, it'll tell you you have to do what they say.
Exactly.
And that is not right. Mandate is not compulsory.
It goes back to Orwell, his Animal Farm. And for you, I'm sure you're familiar with listeners. If you've never read Animal Farm, it's a short read and you got to read it. But it goes back to how they changed the definitions of the basic tenets that they had for the barn animals after they overthrew the farmer. And what me and my friends say this all the time, the little catchphrase, two legs good, four legs bad. But originally it was four legs good, two legs bad. But at the end of the book, it had changed to two legs good, four legs bad. And I remember one of the last parts of the book when the animals looked in through the window and the humans and the pigs were having a party and they looked upon them that they could not tell the difference between the two.
Yeah.
And it comes back to changing language and what definitions are. And it's one of the most powerful things I think that we have is language, and we cannot forget it. We cannot forsake it because it's one of the most powerful tools that will be used against us. And we're seeing that in real time today with the change of these definitions and the introductions of new terms that really, when you look into it, you ask, what is the meaning of this word or this phrase? And you can't get an answer, but it sounds good when it's being spouted out from some YouTube or TikTok video. Man, it's just, it's an interesting topic. I'll just leave it at that.
But there are a lot of interesting topics in this world. Unfortunately, most of the world seems to be hanging back waiting for America to do something. I'm sad for that because Australians in particular, you know, we all know something's not right. Well, most of us know something's not right. Most of us think that something is going to happen in the very near future. Mm-hmm. But all of us don't know whether or not that something is going to be big enough to affect the entire world. We hope so. We certainly believe that it's going to affect Australia. But here in Australia, people are sitting back waiting for somebody else to do it. Mm. So part of what I'm doing with the Voice of Freedom is getting people to stand up and do it. We need doers, not watchers.
Yeah, you do.
At this time in our history, both your country and mine need doers.
We do.
So we're working with a guy in Melbourne in Victoria called Darren Bergworth, who's come up with a concept called My Place, which is essentially he has a factory space in the CBD of a large suburb in Melbourne. He's opened that up now, made it a community venue. They do all sorts of courses in there. They have market days. They have advice for people who are struggling in with different things, be that with, you know, making enough money to get rent paid or get food or whatever. They are doing the community-based things that councils should be doing and aren't doing. And from that group, you see the doers because they'll come and they'll do stuff. You'll see the wannabes who want to be the mayor or want to be this or want to be that, but they're not actually prepared to put the work into it. And then you'll see the people who gather around and are the worker bees, the supporters of those who are leading. Mm-hmm. This is a great way of finding the leaders that we need to find in our community and be able to raise them up at the next election to represent us. That's sort of where we're at.
Well, it gets back to the same thing. I love the idea about going back and working local. Now, how do your elections work? We have a basic system here where we can elect city, next level is county, next level is state, and after that, then it's federal. In Australia, do you have a similar system, or how do you elect somebody to say like your parliament, or do you have a parliament? Can you explain that a little bit to myself and the listeners?
We do have a parliament. We have a state parliament. We have a federal parliament, and we have local council. Local council is, your town or city. They're meant to do the things like the garbage collection and certain roads and that kind of thing. States, much like you, state run. And then we have a federal overview as well. A federal government thing as well where, once again, we're back to the polls. We go every 3 or 4 years, depending on when they think it's going to be the best time for them to win. And, works pretty much exactly the same way as you do. We don't have to show ID when we go in to vote either. It is possible to go and vote a number of times, a number of places, in the same day because the electoral rolls are all crossed off using pen and ruler. So if you go to, let's say there's 5 booths in your particular area where you can vote, you can go to all 5 and vote 5 times and you're not likely to get caught.
Wow.
You know, so it just makes there is so many, just like you, we've got a lot of dead people who we don't hear or see anything of for 3 years, but they come out and vote.
I love, there's an old story about Lyndon B. Johnson, former president after Kennedy. And he was out with, a group of people in a graveyard. And he pretty much paraphrased, he says, "Boys, I want you to write down the names on these gravestones because they got just as much right to vote as anybody else."
Yeah. Yeah.
And, I'm almost, me personally, I kind of like basic things like you vote, you dip your finger in ink. That would be great, but that would require complete in-person voting. Here's an example of our mail-in voting. They'll mail out a ballot to anybody. I've recently moved. Not far, but I've moved locations. So I went to my old house, and there was a ballot sent to my old house. Well, I registered my new house, and guess what? Arrived in my mailbox.
There you go.
But another ballot. Isn't that interesting?
Interesting
that, all right, I did it just out of, no malice, no thought. It was just like a mood. Here's what I'm doing, and I got 2 ballots. Now, think about somebody that's politically devious. And I've known political consultants. In fact, I had one for many years. That was a good friend of mine. Wow. These are some evil, soulless people. It's Malthusian, right?
Yeah.
The ends justify the means. And think about if they could figure that out, and if I can do that, think about what they could do. So there's no way to ensure the complete legitimacy of our elections if we have things like that going on. And when one brings this up, especially at a large level, if you have a lot of followers. Yeah. Conway, Mr. Conway, you get crucified. But the other side can come up. In fact, Hillary just came out with a little, I don't know if it's TikTok, warning the people that the midterms, the MAGA Republicans are going to steal the elections. Now, that's justified.
Oh, yeah.
And they'll play that everywhere. But if the Republicans.
I wouldn't be worried about any tweets from Hillary, mate. She's been dead for 2 years. So.
Well.
We'll talk about that another time.
I think she was born without a soul.
I'm afraid, mate, I'm going to have to go.
But it's great
I'm
talking.
I'm under a bit of time pressure at my end. I've got a show I've got to do in the not-too-distant future, and I'm going to have to shoot it off. But love to catch up again and talk, and I hope Chuck can do it next time. We can talk about that cute new little puppy he's got.
Oh, he does. You've seen the picture too, huh? Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
It's a beautiful little puppy. Okay, Carl, before we go, let everybody know where they can find you, how they can find you, and all that good stuff.
Sure. You can find me under the name Voice of Freedom on YouTube, or you can go to my YouTube channel, Nun2K. That's N-U-N-N, as in November, uniform, November, November, number two, letter K. And that's the police coming to get me. So, yeah, Nun2K is my YouTube channel. I also have a webpage, www.vofhq.com. That'll give you a bit of an idea of what we're doing and where we're going here. And obviously, mate, very keen to continue talking with you guys in your part of the world. It's a very important part of the world to us. In fact, I'm kind of thinking we're going to be almost semi-related shortly. So...
yes.
I do believe that there is a very high chance that Australia will become the 51st state of America. So,
well, that would
at
be
least temporarily.
I'd love to be able to fly out over there without a passport.
Yeah, because it'd be pretty cool, wouldn't it?
You do have a beautiful continent. You really do. So thank you for being with us tonight. And I know you're on tour and it's a busy schedule and it wasn't easy to carve this time out. So from the bottom of my heart, I thank you, Carl. You have a good evening, my friend.
Thank you, I will. Very good. Thanks, Nature Boy, and say good day to Chuck.
I'm gonna call a couple of hard pipe-hitting niggas to go to work on the homes here with a pair of pliers and a blowtorch. You hear me talking, hillbilly boy? I ain't through with you by a damn sight. I'm gonna get medieval on your ass.
Ochilly.com.
WallStreetWindow.com. Gold, silver, the stock market, WallStreetWindow.com.
Perhaps you're invested deeply.
Perhaps you're not in deep enough. Maybe you're thinking about getting started. WallStreetWindow.com. Michael Swanson, the brilliant author of The War State, understood these trends professionally for many years, and now he gives you the benefit of his knowledge. WallStreetWindow.com. Go there now.
In Denial, Secret Wars with Airstrikes and Tanks by Larry Hancock. Secret Wars became a staple of U.S. covert operations and are still happening today. Larry Hancock's book, In Denial, rips the cover off many of them. Using new files, it exposes things about the Bay of Pigs that no one has ever written about before. It shows why it really failed and why the United States did not learn from it. Secret Wars became a staple of U.S. covert operations and are still happening today. It also shows why other countries today are doing secret operations with more success. This is the book that puts what some want to deny into the light. In Denial, Secret Wars with Airstrikes and Tanks, Larry Hancock. For more information, go to larry-hancock.com. Pick up your copy of In Denial at amazon.com in digital or physical form.
when a fan of the Ocelli Effect calls in to the Ocelli Effect.
I just wanted to call in and tell you and Michael Swanson and J.P. Sottile and all of the guests that you have how much I love your show. Always interesting. It's always informative. I just wanted to tell you in person on the phone. I mean, I love you. I love your show. I love everything you do. I will always be there to support you. You know that.
We appreciate you so much. You have okay. No idea.
Thanks. And most of our fans just send hate mail and death threats.
Ocelli.com.
Every time I put it on my face, I'm able to breathe just a little bit deeper.
What are people saying about MyTrueEssence.net?
I'm going to tell you something serious, man. I just want to tell your listeners, I bought some of that Modifilin from Christy, and she made me up some of this emu oil mixed with some other stuff. I don't know what's in it, but I like the way it smelled. And I started putting it on, rubbing it on my foot, rubbing it on my knee, and like the second day, I just noticed it. I'm walking around, I'm like, damn, my knee is loose.
I can tell you that oil you gave me helped me with my carpal and my shoulder problem. If it wasn't, I wouldn't be working.
My ankles would really be pesky and bother me. And I'm telling you, the pain just went away. Essential oils rule!
And when I put that on, it's like my skin came alive.
MyTrueEssence.net.
This is James Corbett of CorbettReport.com, and you're listening to the Ocelli Effect at Ocelli.com.
We should learn from our relatively recent history, my brother. That's where I'm coming from. I say all power to the people.
And now the most underrated voice in all media, Chuck Ocelli.
Well, we are back for the second hour of the Ocelli Effect, and unfortunately, Mr. Ocelli isn't able to join us tonight. He's having, the major internet provider that feeds the Ocelli network at the bunker, is having some global issues. So you're stuck with my voice, Nature Boy. So I really want to welcome you back for the second hour. And tonight we have a longtime friend, a great guy, very knowledgeable person, especially in the medical field, because that's what he does. He is a neonatal nurse who's recently had to relocate to the great state of Florida. But from what we were talking about offline, sounds like a good move. So everybody, please welcome Captain Trips to the show. How you doing, Captain?
I'm doing well. I'm doing well, Nature Boy. I'm only going to throw in one little caveat because there's a bit of a distinction. I'm actually a nurse practitioner.
Oh, okay.
I'm still a nurse by training. We are still in nursing. You hear nurse practitioners you'll hear them referred to in some states as advanced practice nurses. Basically, what we are is, we start off as a nurse, we get into a specialty, and then we go on for additional training. It's master's degree or a doctorate degree. But we are trained generally in a specific medical specialty. So I am, I'm by training a neonatal nurse practitioner. So the specific pathophysiology, all that stuff, is all neonatal and pediatric. Now that being said, a great deal of that carries over into adult, and I also have quite a bit of adult experience under my belt. But nurse practitioners in most states and in most cases are doing a very similar thing to what a physician's doing. We diagnose, we prescribe, we do all the same things that you would expect from a physician. But we're still under nursing.
So
go ahead.
From my perspective and my standpoint, mm-hmm. and many of the listeners, when it comes mm-hmm. to medical issues, what's going on mm-hmm. in the medical system? You know, you're, as the English say, shite. And you really know you're shite because you are a specialist and a very bright person. Yes. So what is going on in the medical world down there in Florida? And what's this thing I've been hearing about? the R, RSV coming out?
RSV.
It's an increase. Is there a really an issue with that one, or is it just maybe something that is used that happens every year that is kind of being overblown a little bit for something maybe we don't know about?
Well, you know, that's interesting you would ask that. So RSV or some, or its full name is respiratory syncytial virus. For most people, it is going to be a cold, a pretty bad cold. Mm-hmm. But it's going to be a cold. It's a bronchiolitic, upper respiratory tract infection. It's very seasonal. It's been around for a long time. And when I was in my former, part of the country, RSV season would usually start sometime, usually late fall, early summer. I'm sorry, early winter. It would peak usually sometime. We would usually peak in that part of the country somewhere between the end of February to the end of March. And it was brutal. Every year, the pediatric and neonatal ICUs were overflown or overfilled. You couldn't get a bed. There were lots of babies that were coming in. But let me tell you something else about RSV. RSV is even more survivable than the other virus, that C virus that I won't say by name.
Oh, the virus we shall not name, like the
yes, the virus that the shall blood, remain nameless.
Yeah, the virus that shall remain nameless. Yes, yes, yes.
Yeah. The biggest problem with it is that when newborns get it, they can be pretty sick and pretty miserable for about a week. Some of them do require hospitalization. They don't generally require hospitalization for, except for the fact that the coughing, the congestion is really bad. And they usually have trouble eating, so they'll most often need some IV fluids. Some babies who were premature, and they have those premature lung issues, which last for years, even if they make it out of the hospital, it takes a long time for that to get fixed. They are the most vulnerable in the population because they're the most fragile. I have been doing this for a long time. I can count on less than one hand the children I have seen actually die with RSV. The ones that I have been babies who were not healthy babies to begin with. Mm-hmm. So they were the case of the, you know, fragile old person getting the flu and dying.
Yes.
It's very similar there. So mm-hmm. The two things that have changed with RSV since the start of the, global meltdown is the seasonality. The pattern seems to have changed a bit, and I'm attributing that to the fact that you had the normal RSV season interrupted by the, we'll say, virus mitigation measures. So people were right at home, kids were in school. It just wasn't spreading around. Once the population started to venture out more, at least in the Northeast, would have been, I guess, the end of 2020 into 2021, we had an RSV season that popped up out of nowhere in August.
Mm-hmm. It's a little early.
So the stories that you're hearing, it was early. Now, where I'm at in Florida, I can't even remember. The RSV season is completely different, but it's a totally different climate, region. So that's really what it is. And I can't speak for California, although I do know, briefly talking to a colleague of mine in San Diego, she was saying that that they're getting hit pretty hard with RSV. The thing that's making it so interesting is that suddenly this is a big news story.
Mm-hmm. What's that?
The hospitals, they're full of RSV, and the hospitals are overflowing with RSV, and oh my God, this RSV is so bad, blah, 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 blah. Has anyone else noticed that? A little bit of hair on fire hysteria?
That's funny you say that, because I'm noticing on the mainstream media that's popping up, popping up, popping up.
Yeah.
Popping up, popping up, RSV, what's going on? And it's just this...
Wow.
Big,
here's something
big thing
very
about
interesting.
RSV. Hmm.
Yeah, well,
what could be causing that, Mr. Captain
Trips? Mr. Bezos over at the Washington Post, where democracy dies in darkness.
Oh, yes.
We have a little article here dated November 1st, 2022, posted at 6:30 a.m. Eastern Time. Now, this is behind a paywall, but what I can read to you is the most important things.
Sure, read.
Pfizer's RSV vaccine given during pregnancy protects infants from severe illness. Our fine friends at Pfizer, old Al Borla, he's done it again.
Wow.
I cannot believe the depth of the corruption. And I never, ever for a million years didn't think that our government was corrupt.
Yes.
But my God, can they be any more obvious?
No, it's as if they don't even care anymore.
They don't care anymore.
Used to try to keep it under wraps. And granted, I've heard it said by other people, well, when you had the people like Kissingers and Brzezinskis and stuff like that, those psychopaths running the world, at least they were competent. Okay.
And they were competent.
These new breeds of the same psychopaths that came out of that, well, they're like trust fund kids. All right. They're not as good as their predecessors.
You're absolutely
right. It just goes back to a long time ago. There's this guy named Nichols, and he was a Clinton whistleblower back in the day. He was part of the Clinton cabal. Larry Nichols.
Okay.
Larry Nichols.
I remember who you're talking about.
He had this really gruff voice, and he says, and I think it was actually interviewing Alex Jones. This is kind of back a long time ago, and Alex Jones occasionally did good work, so give credit where credit's due. But he's like, Alex, think about the Clintons and what the good news is. They're lying to you. That means they ain't got their act together. He said, when you got to be worried is when they stop lying to you. And now it's getting to the point where I'm like, have they reached that point lying now where they're not even bother lying about what's going on? I mean, let's take and we don't want to get too far into the boop because, we don't want to get canceled off of everything. And it just seems to be like that. But I just find it intriguing that the last booster was tested not on humans, but on mice. And what really got me is from what I have gathered, it was only 8 mice. And I watched the CDC's panel of 15 doctors when they had to approve it, right? And they all said no conflict. And every one of them was like, yay, 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 yay. And it really impressed me. I don't know if that's the correct word to say, but it hit me hard that I'm looking at 15 unelected, not even bureaucrats.
Nope.
Basically determining the fate of millions of children. And by doing it, they give the government the ability to codify that into law and regulation, 15 of those people, without anything besides 8 humanized mice they tested it on. And they're that blatant, and sadly, there are some people, not many, especially when you look at the numbers of the parents wanting to voluntarily put that medical procedure, have their children go through the medical procedure. It's just like, it's mind-boggling. My gosh. And they're not even hiding it.
Nope. Let me see if I can find this, because I hate to say what. So, I know I've talked about him before. There's a social scientist and statistician out of, is he Belgian? I think he's Belgian. Anyway, his name is Matthias Desmond. He is the guy.
Mass formation guy.
Yes, mass formation guy. But part of what he's talked about with mass formation, when it gets to kind of the end is people willing to sacrifice their children.
Yeah.
And I hate to say it, we are seeing that. That's what we saw. We saw a government insist and then a population fall in line to sacrifice multiple generations of young people.
Yes.
Because of a virus that really was only terribly, terribly fatal to people over 85 years old.
And who statistically, there was a 0% chance of children dying from that. But it not only does it go beyond just what we're talking about now, I think it goes to a much higher perspective, if you will.
Absolutely.
The ability to brainwash, mind control a population. Here's an example.
Mm-hmm.
People have asked for years how the German population, and I don't mean this in a bad way because I know what I'm about to say can be used as, I won't call them a Nazi, but this is not.
I know.
Read in
We're
the garden.
We're going to be called Kanye soon.
In the Garden of the Beasts from Norman Dodd, and it was taken from his writings, and he was the ambassador to Germany. Great book. From the rise of the, we will not name the party, mind-boggling. But people have asked, how can the Chinese with the Soviets, the Germans, adopt this mind thinking where they're turning in their neighbors and their friends knowing well they're going to be slaughtered? How can they turn like this? And sadly, in a much lesser level, because people aren't getting taken out and shot, but the turning of society on others in society, we witnessed in the COVID or in the last few years, the dividing of friends, the dividing of families, to take our society and divide us at a molecular level. I mean, it wasn't bad enough they had us divided by race, sex, gender, blah, 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 blah. Now they're taking it down person to person, destroying close relationships.
But Nature Boy, it's okay. It's okay. You know why?
Why?
It's so funny
why,
you
Captain?
Said that. So what date was this? I want to say this was published on October. Yes, October 31st, 2022.
Oh,
the good professor Emily Oster. She is, I've never heard her name before, and quite frankly, don't care if I ever hear it again, but she's an economist at Brown University. She's also the author of The Family Firm, A Data-Driven Guide to Better Decision-Making in Early School Years, and Expecting Better, Why Conventional Pregnancy Wisdom is Wrong and What You Really Need to Know. Well, she published this short little piece in The Atlantic.
Hold on for a second. I'm going to interject. That sounded like a bunch of left-wing, word salad. I mean, just the title.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
What did it mean?
Words.
Okay, basically what I got out of it is traditional way of birthing is going to be replaced by a new modernized way, most likely could be artificial. And that's just what I read out of the title. And if I'm wrong, please correct me.
Actually, I got the same feeling, the feeling as you did. What I will say is I have never heard of this, this particular economist, and I really don't know what her take on pregnancy is, and I don't know if that's where she's going. This is the only reason why I know of this person. So she published this little piece called Let's Declare a Pandemic Amnesty. We need to forgive one another for what we did and said when we were in the dark about COVID.
Okay,
so
please go on.
Professor Oster, let me just tell you, that excuse will work or would have worked had you all come to your senses in, say, June or July of 2020. Because by then, we had evidence. And every time my quote-unquote side tried to talk about the evidence, we were deplatformed. We were pulled off of this platform. Our videos were taken off of Facebook. We were called grandma killers. We were called everything. We were Trumpers. We were this. So let me tell you, Miss Emily, what you can do with your amnesty. Amnesty is when you get complete and total forgiveness without ever answering for what you did. You can't have amnesty. We can talk about forgiveness after your ass appears in the dock on the next Nuremberg.
Yes.
Because of the politicians you support, the bureaucrats you support, and people like you who have a platform, if you're getting published in the Atlantic is not some lowbrow publication. You need to know people or have some pull to get your work placed in the Atlantic.
Yes.
So when you answer for the lives you destroyed, for the jobs that were lost, for the suicides, for the 2+ years of education that children lost, when you answer for the families that were destroyed, then maybe we can talk about forgiveness. And if you're not prepared to do that, then it's a death struggle.
Well,
so you may want to reconsider your request for amnesty and maybe grovel and beg for forgiveness. Admit what you've done. Admit that those people that said this is the wrong way to approach this, that those people that said you cannot force people to take an experimental medical product against their will and tell them that their job and their livelihood is at stake if they don't do what you want them to do. And you want amnesty, lady? I'm going to tell you something.
Mm-hmm.
You better hope we never sit down together in person.
Tell it like it is, Brother Calvin. Tell
it
like it is.
How about people like me who had to take whatever little savings I had and move my family 800 miles away so I could continue to provide for them? Yeah. Because you and your lack of knowledge pushed policies that had people trying to take my livelihood away from me because I wouldn't go along with the science.
The science.
But actually, see, Emily, I was going along with the science. I wasn't going along with the science with a little R in a circle behind it because I didn't bow at the altar of Anthony Fauci.
It's
because I could read science and I listened to people who could interpret science.
And you are specialized. Your job is to know medical science in a specialized manner. So there's anybody who can speak with a voice of authority, it is a person like you, Captain. So your words are holding some serious weight. It goes back to, it's interesting, when the meme, Orwellian meme, came out, trust the science. Also, as a side note, when you look at propaganda, right, and you look at slogans, they're generally three words. I'm with her, lock her up. Trust the science.
Build back better.
Hope and change. Whatever it is, when you say
wait. Just say no.
Just say no. Oh, I'm Lee Harvey Oswald. That's a little homage to our missing host, by the way. But when you see that, though, it just. For me, it's a red flag. It says, okay, that's propaganda, but I've studied propaganda for years. And
doesn't that come right out of NLP?
It might. I'm not an expert on NLP. I know it's a very powerful
I'm not either.
Tool, though.
Ridiculously powerful.
But when you see it being used, you're like, might not know exactly what's going on, but I see the effect and I see the source. And when I connect the two together, even though I might not know the minute details between the two, I'm smart enough to know there's something going on here. And it's something that at least one should ask serious questions about. But why we got onto NLP, but I don't know, but NLP, neurolinguistic programming.
Yeah.
Hey, that just tied that thing right back together.
That put a nice little bow on it. Now I'm going to find all the three-word phrases.
It's propaganda. Yeah. It's so simple. The thing that I try to express to as many people as I can, especially my normie friends, but it's really hard to break through the cognitive dissonance with my normie friends. Yeah. So are most of them. And I'm pretty much, hey, look, I'm not going to preach. If you want to talk about it, we'll talk about it. I'll be completely honest. But if you know, you don't want to hear about it, man. Let's talk about the weather, what you've been up to, or something like that, to bring some community so we don't split, you know, type of a thing.
Mm-hmm. No, you're right. You're absolutely right.
Yeah. It's just a crazy time that we're living in, a time of propaganda and universal deceit, when telling the truth, truly what we're seeing is a revolutionary act. You tried to tell the truth today in whatever form it is. If it goes against the system and you have a big enough voice, you will be destroyed. And there's case after case after case. And not only in the
look at Dr. Ralph Merrick. You want to hear an absolutely disgusting. This is one of the reasons why I'm going to be the first to tell you, I have no faith and or confidence in this quote unquote medical system that I do work in. And I'll be very honest that I'm doing my damnedest to do what I can as one provider. You know, pretty much it's just being bluntly honest with people as much as I can. But so he was, he's a world renowned critical care physician. He was practicing at, he was in Virginia.
I'm familiar. And I've heard
talks with him. Dr. Merrick, he was one of the people that came up with a multi-drug cocktail that was successful at treating people that were ending up in the ICU with the scary virus. So it was the sickest of the sick.
Right, the worst of the worst.
And his hospital basically told him he couldn't treat these people with anything except remdesivir.
Now, didn't he give, a talk to Congress or some congressional?
Oh, yeah.
On C-SPAN. I saw that. And
this was in 2021. The man was brought to tears on the floor of the Congress.
Yes.
Because, and he talks a lot too. He was just on, just heard him again on the High Wire with Del Bigtree.
I like the High Wire.
He's a good, Del's a good guy. The thing that I like the most about Del is that Del is a lefty. And, he's a very honest. He was raised a lefty, but Del saw the light.
This goes beyond partisanship.
And well, it does.
A shameless plug to Del, which I highly recommend. The thing that I like about it is that he is very clear about this is what I think, this is what these facts, and guess what? This is my interpretation on these facts, and here's the study, and here's a link to the study, right?
Yep.
Go out and look for it, and if I'm wrong, then let me know, okay? Mm-hmm. So
he's come back on the air. I've heard him in previous shows, on a show come, you know, pull something up and say, I said X, Y, Z on this show.
And I was wrong.
And it was wrong. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It was wrong. So, but the one thing I was saying about him being a lefty, I don't really care about that as much, but he is someone that, even though I may disagree with probably a lot of his own positions, I find his work extremely valuable. I listen to his show, to listen to his show every week. And I have a lot of respect for him. We can have differences in people. We can have differences, people, and we can still, you know, respect each other.
Well, in the words of the great Rodney King, can't we all just get along?
I know. oh, my God, it was such a simpler time.
I know it was, wasn't it? It was just, my God, you know, I've often said, and I have had everybody's agreed, if it's left, right, young, old, I'm like, look, if you were to go back to Christmas 2019, New Year's, and accurately describe what's going on today, you would be laughed out of the room and called a batshit crazy tinfoil hat wearing conspiracy theorist.
Yep.
And yet, Captain, here we are living in the batshit crazy tinfoil hat wearing world, and it's fact.
Yeah, it's, you know what, and you know, I know Chuck would disagree with me on this too, but look at Jones. Look at Alex Jones. Now, you can dislike Alex Jones. I have a very mixed opinion on the man. I will credit him for a few things for me personally, like a lot of people. Mm-hmm. He was one of the first people I was listening to, you know, in the early 2000s, that was bringing a lot of stuff. You know, he was bringing up a lot of stuff. Some of it sounded completely batsnot crazy. But a lot of it, when you thought about it or when you looked around, he wasn't wrong.
No. In the day, I agree with you. In the day, he did do some good work. And the thing about it is, when I first started listening to him, God, 2004, when he was on Winamp TV and stuff like this, and he first had his Infowars.
That's about when I started hearing him.
What I liked is, and he said, it's not about me, it's about the information he had. Yeah. What attracted me is he had interesting guests with interesting topics. Mm-hmm. That you wouldn't hear anybody where else, right? Now, generally,
they always crossed ideological lines.
Exactly. So there's no left or right.
He would have Chris Hedges on. Mm-hmm. He used to have Webster Tarpley on all the time. He would have someone who would be more of a traditional right wing figure. He definitely did. Now he went off the rails with Trump.
Yeah, totally did.
And the other thing is, I don't care what anyone says. I think he is they're abusing him with this law, this legal settlement BS.
He's being used as the extreme example to set precedents.
Yeah.
And just like he was used in 2016 for censorship, when he was taking off, he was the left wing's hated enemy. So they fucking cheered it. Excuse my expression. Yeah. Not going to bleep it out. We're not AIM anymore. But and the left cheered it. But what people don't realize is when your adversaries get their rights taken away, your rights at the same time get taken away. So don't advocate for that. Fight for that no matter if you despise them. Because if you don't fight for them saving their rights, yours are going to be lost. And he's been used as a precedent for that. And now he's being used as a precedent for defamation lawsuits. I mean, right after the judgments, now they're going after Conway for, what, $250 million. Mm-hmm. Come on, Jeff, where's the sensibility? We have one man talked smack, right? Agree, disagree, right? And the original judgment at almost $1 billion was like, whoa, he didn't kill anybody. It was his opinion. Nope. Right. He didn't send people to people's doorsteps. A lot of his crazy loons followers did it on their own. But look at them, not him. And they gave him $965 million judgment. And that was like, holy crikeys. Set the precedent. Then they come back. Yeah. They can't leave that well enough alone. 2.75 trillion. It's like, where is the sensibility? That is more than the GDP of the majority of countries of this world.
Yeah.
And you want to go after some talk show host that talks smack and, why aren't you going after the Lanza family for that? Because guess what? Alex didn't pull no trigger, man.
I know. You're absolutely right.
You're setting precedents.
I want to know if all the cops that stood around outside of the school in Uvalde, Texas a few months ago and wouldn't go in and engage whatever the hell was going on in there, are you going to go after them?
Right.
Because as far as I'm concerned, there's a lot more blood on their hands than is on Alex Jones's hands.
Right.
And you don't have to like Alex Jones. You don't have to agree with the damn thing the man says. But when you, like you said, when you take his ability to speak his mind away, you take everyone's ability to speak their mind away.
Yes.
This is what got me so up in arms about after the Supreme Court decision on Roe v. Wade in May.
Mm-hmm.
And they started whining. And I said, excuse me? Your body, your choice? How long ago was it that you were screaming that I didn't have a choice with my body?
True.
I was so pissed off. My wife, she walked away. She couldn't stand it anymore. I said, you people had a natural ally. Had you joined us, and saying, no, you can't force, you can't force people to put something in their body that they don't want. And now you want sympathy? Yeah. No, you're not going to get any sympathy.
You
made your bed, sleep in it.
That Atlantic, I saw that came out a few days ago, and as soon as it hit, boy, it took traction and went viral.
Oh, yeah.
And
it did.
There's a lot of people, and I heard the common thing, and they address the same thing you did, factually based. I have my life destroyed. I have this, this, and this because of a, let's just say, potentially false narrative that you pushed on. Look at these videos of how all these celebrities, you are the enemy, you are the enemy, you are the enemy. Now it comes to find out that no, we're not the enemy, that the vaccine does, as far as transmission and getting it, according to the recent testimony by a Pfizer CEO in the European Union that says, oh, no, it was never tested. And they've never, the thing is, I have to be fair. Let me finish this really quick and I'll get back to you.
Okay. Oh, sorry.
And in all fairness, I've always told that the pharmaceutical companies never said officially that it did anything for transmission or you getting it. In fact, I have a friend, when he read the paper, he's a smart guy, so he read his release form when he got the shot. Exactly. And there was a section that said that. Okay, and he's like, yeah, David even said it on my release form. So at the same time, you have to be fair. Officially, they never said it, that it stopped the transmission, but yet you had the machine.
It was which, a lie of this.
And the machine who was fueled by potentially the pharmaceutical companies that told you it did, that told you if you don't get it, you're going to kill grandmother, that you have to do this. And guess what? Hey, in some places you can get a free lap dance or a joint when I'm like, wait a minute, this is something that is goes beyond a virus. This is about social engineering, because if it was truly about a medical issue, right, people would be flocking to it. You wouldn't have to bribe them with a joint and a lap dance. Oh, by the way,
I said that a million times. I said that a million times when this was all going on. I said, this was a real deadly pandemic. You wouldn't have to coerce people. There would be lining up of their own free will. Now, what I was going to say was, you're absolutely right. I'll go one step further.
What's up?
That was the first thing I did in December 2020 when Pfizer released – I mean, what they released was not the real data, by the way. The real data was what they got forced out of them that they initially wanted 75 years to release.
75 years, yeah.
But what they read – I read the study. I read what they published. The very first thing when you're reading, if you're not familiar with reading these research, these literature, they're horribly boring, dry. They're very hard to read.
Yes, I've read them.
When you know what you're reading, you know what to look for.
Yes.
So generally, pretty much early on in the paper, they're going to tell you what their study endpoints were. Their study endpoints were what they were actually looking for. So I read a little further. I looked, their study endpoints were reduction in symptoms. Okay. All right, fine. And, I mean, that's fair.
And that's what
they always said.
Back to my original point, they only said was reduction of symptoms. That's all that they ever clarified from the beginning.
They ever
that said, this procedure would help you with. Mm-hmm. So go ahead. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to interrupt, but I had to throw that out there.
You're fine. So their study that they published to the public never looked for can this product prevent a person from getting from transmitting it? They never looked at it. Does this product reduce hospitalization? Nah, never looked at it. Does this product reduce death? We don't know. We don't look at it. Okay, what did you look for? We looked for reduction in symptoms from moderate to mild. That is all they looked at and told you. But your media, your people like your Rachel Maddow and your Keith Olbermans and your CNNs and your –
Don't forget our president.
And let me say a little bit further, because let me piss off the Trump supporters. I'm going to tell you something. I will forgive Trump for the initial part of wanting this vaccine out when he was still president, when he probably naively trusted these people that they were going to come up with something.
Mm-hmm.
Now, where I will fault him for is he has yet to retract that. He is yet to say, hey, I made a mistake. Hey, he is still – so as far as I'm concerned, I think our Mr. Trump is part of this. He is part of this, but I think he's tied – I think he's a little more tied into it than people want to believe.
My personal opinion about Mr. Trump is that he's just playing his role, whether knowingly or unknowingly, but I still think that he's just part of the cabal.
Yep.
And it's time for him to go up on stage and play his role, just like a WWE match. And the public, you have one side that's going after Hulk Hogan, forgive my knowledge because it's been so long since I've seen that.
Oh, no.
And another one after Jesse the Body Ventura, right? And they all fight against each other, the Iron Sheik. And even the audience just are there completely opposed. And they really, for that time, think it's real. And they get in the cot, and then the two wrestlers, the Iron Sheik and Jesse, go off stage, and they go back there. Once the lights go off, they're like, dude, that was a good match. Mm-hmm. Did you have to slam me that hard? Yeah, it was good. I was like, yeah, it was good, man. Hey, let's get cleaned up, get the old lady and the kids, man. We got a few days off. Let's go hang out in Disneyland. Yeah, cool, man.
Yep.
I mean, that's how it is.
Exactly.
There's an interesting
part
movie.
Of this is,
part of this is...
Oh, no, I was going to say, I want to hear what you... I was going to say, part
going
of this
back.
Is what the public wants.
It is. I mean, there's... I mentioned my normie friends earlier, right? Mm-hmm. They don't want to be broken out of the matrix of propaganda that they're in. Lack of a better term, I'm not a great speaker. And if you try to burst that window pane of reality that they see through, it really goes back to Plato's cave. I mean, it hasn't changed in thousands of years, and anybody that's not familiar with Plato's cave, when the boy that broke free from the chains and escaped the cave, that he realized that what him and everybody else thought was reality was actually something being projected to him, and he found this entire world, and he's like, oh my God, this is what reality truly is. Look at all these vast things and these fields and these birds and these trees. I'm going to go down and tell my friends so I can sort of break them free and we can all experience this. And he goes back down to the cave and says, hey, this is what I found. My God, you're being lied to and deceived. And them embraced him and breaking free. What did they do? They killed him.
Yes, they did.
And that was thousands of years ago Plato wrote that. And that stuff has not changed, man.
Nope. And I'll go with another, and you know, I'm a Christian, but it is a myth. It is our myth. Who else did they do that to?
let me say, his name started with J, ended with S,
Yeshua.
If you look at his Jewish name,
he was really good with making wine.
Yeah, he could get fish going in a heartbeat, man.
Nobody held a bigger fish fry, a better fish fry than JC. I've said it all the time.
You thought Houdini could escape out of something. Hold my beer. Oh, excuse me, hold my chalice of wine. You know.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. I've always said if and when Jesus comes back, if it's right now, his own Christians will kill him.
Oh, well, I've often said, that's funny you say that, right? I haven't been to churches in years, right? Because I honestly only found one in my whole life that I felt was true. It was literally a place in Seattle where you go in there and you see people in their Sunday best sitting next to somebody who just woke up from the streets and everybody was accepting it. It was the true gospel, right? Amazing. Everything else has just been politics. And I've tried to get inside of churches, and we won't go into that because we could spend another whole show talking about the little inside things of churches and stuff like that. But I've often said, if Jesus and the disciples just miraculously appeared one day, right, hypothetically, bam, and walked into your average church, especially one of the highfalutin mega churches, they would be sitting down and around them wouldn't be a whole section of pews that would be empty. And if people were sitting in, they'd be looking at them with their noses curled up going, oh, my God, they don't smell good. They need it.
They don't smell.
And I'm like, yeah, exactly. Sorry, it just goes back to the hypocrisy of organized religion. And this is not about the religion itself. This is not about even the dogma of the thing. Yeah. It's just churches are, and as religions, even though I personally believe, and it's just my one man's belief, that's divinely inspired, it is still a creation of man, and it's something that's managed by man, and it's going to be fallible because we are fallible, and that's why you see all these stories about the fallibility of churches. And as a matter of fact, there's one going on now that's kind of under the radar that just popped in my head, and I have to say it, is and Derek Brose, we recently had him on, is doing a great series on this in The Last American Vagabond on the ritualized sexual abuse that's happened in Utah under the Mormon Church. And this is not conspiracy theory. This is going through the courts. This is based on factual document, witness, and some of the stories about what happened. I can't read. I honestly can't read that stuff. I don't have the stomach. And it, you know, he's
I've seen some
job.
I've seen some pretty gory things, but no, I can't. If I don't need to know those details, I'm going to be honest. I'm not going to. To know that an actual bona fide, ring of child predators was busted, and that you know it was. That's all I need to know.
I'm the same way.
Yeah. I don't need to know the gory details. I'm already horrified. Trust me.
Yeah, but that's not to go.
I think of my child.
That's not to go into that, but that's just to go back to the thing about the fallibility of organized religions, especially at high levels. It was interesting when I was a kid and I first came to Christ, got saved, all right? And I did it as a teenager on my own. Long story, won't even get into it. I often thought it was odd that the church I was going to was a Baptist church, right in the middle. Of, you know, your little prayer book, you know, pamphlet you get, right, was the budget. The most it's like the centerfold. Literally, the centerfold was the budget. This is how much we need. This is what we spent. This is what you said. And I'm like, shouldn't the centerpiece of that be a Christ or the message?
I would think so.
Shouldn't, if you're going to put the budget, you put it towards the back if somebody wants, but you put it in the centerfold. What does that say about the church's ultimate goal? Was it about spirituality and the gospel, which I firmly believe in, or was it maybe you guys were a little bit too concerned about money and maybe they could possibly need to say, maybe we need to readjust our priorities and start focusing on the gospel and the greatness of what the message of the gospel can bring, and let's start supporting the communities. Here's another one. Okay. We're on a good subject, so I'm just going to roll with it, if you don't mind, Captain.
All right. Not at all.
Okay.
Not at all.
I have to do a little bit of background. I have lived in Europe. I have lived all over the place in my younger days. And I was living in Seattle back in the 90s. And I'm just going to name this and so everybody can look it up. If you don't think I'm talking smack, I'm going to be as honest as I can. I moved up there because of my job, didn't know anything. So, I have to look up, I'm drawing a name, but so I found this church, and at the time it was, Washington's pretty much not quite largest church at the time. And hold on, I'm trying to look up the name of the church because it's been so long. But you're going to really, really, the name of the pastor who really grew the church, who was very charismatic, was, hold on, I'm trying to find it. Forgive me, everybody, for a little bit of stumbling, but I really got to get the name of the church. And forgive me, let's see.
You're fine.
I think I got enough of it. Bob Moorhead, Wikipedia. Let's go here. Okay. Oh, by the way, that's the name of the pastor here. Okay. Got it. So I'm in Seattle. Don't know anybody. And they have this, I think the internet was new and I was on some chat group. And I was on a Christian thing and I met some girl who says, hey, you know, I'm part of this thing called Overlake Christian Church. And, you know, by the way, there's a function going out and, there's a concert, Christian concert. And I went out, met them, they're friends. I says, oh, cool, man. So I'll go check it out. At the time, it was a big church, but it was just expanding. I mean, they had to have three services every Sunday because they're just filling up. So they went from a big regional church to a super church, right? This is in the 90s dollars. They built a new facility for $37 million.
Ooh.
Yeah, 90s money, baby. Hey. Oh, 90s money. Yeah. And I have to say, it was top notch. I mean, from a performance, sure, and I've done many years of live production, right? They had it down when it came to the production value of that 5,000 foot, you know, cathedral and, you know, all the rooms and everything. So, this goes back to the focus on money, 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 money. First, I had a problem with them spending that much money on that because I'm like, dude, you could take just a chunk of that and really put it into the community. But that was one issue I had. So long story short, but I had to put some background. I'm part of the singles group and we put together going out and putting care packages of basic things like hand warmers and maybe some ramen soups and some wool socks for homeless teens. Cause there was a real problem even back in the '90s. With homeless teens out there. And, so we went to the church. Okay. Mm-hmm. And they'd already moved into the new things. It says we need, you know, maybe a few $100 to buy these basic things. And you know what the church said? It's not in our budget. It's not in our budget.
Oh my God.
Meanwhile, they just moved into a $37 million church. And you can't give a few hundred dollars for us to take our time to go buy this stuff, to put the packages together, for us to go out to the streets and to actually try to make at least some difference in these kids' lives. As long as it was just maybe a semi-hot meal and a warm pair of socks, man, and a way to brush their teeth. But no, it's not in the budget. So back to, you know, just the money focusedness of organized religions. And it's a shame. The one that I really liked, like I said, was one that I found in another one in downtown Seattle in the university district. And it was just, it was about the message and the gospel and the true meaning of what Christ stood for. And that's, you know, you're taking care of your community first. You know, you're not trying to make a fast buck. So I digress. But, you know, I'm not done with a diatribe. So what do you think about that, Captain? What's your opinion on that crazy rant?
I'm right with you, man. I consider myself more of a Christian anarchist, to be quite honest with you.
Me too.
And I have no use for organized churches now. We're actually looking for a church here locally. A lot of it is because we want for Lexi, just for the youth groups type thing, because she's getting to that age where she needs a little more socialization, and over my dead body, will she go to ever step foot in a public school? So, anyway.
Yeah. Good. God bless you on that, Captain. God bless you on that.
That will never change. But anyway, I 100% agree with you. You know, it's a funny story from, you know, I was actually raised, Catholic. Went through the whole Catholic stuff. But I was in Catholic school. My mom had me in Catholic school up until third grade. And the reason why she took me out of Catholic school wasn't that the education was bad. It was actually a pretty good school. It was that they raised the tuition. Mm-hmm. And at the same time they raised the tuition, my mother noticed that both of the priests were driving new Cadillacs.
Oh, Lord.
Oh, yeah, Lord. And my mom, before she was sent to Afghanistan in the meat grinder and had her brain destroyed, you didn't mess with my mother. Mm-hmm. And, you know, my mother went in there and she raised, holy hell, you know, so you're raising my tuition. And now this is in the 80s. The 80s weren't the best time financially for most people.
No.
And this was in the early 80s too. So that puts a little more in perspective. But, you know, so she was lit. So that's how I ended up getting out of Catholic school. And then I you know, for a good part of my adult life, thought I was an atheist. And then it dawned on me that really you know, what my biggest problem was organized religion. It was never the message or the, you know, the teaching and the gospels and whatnot. And, so I often think of this is something that's been attributed to Gandhi. Now, whether he said that or said this or not, I don't know, but I always liked it is, I really like your Christ. It's your Christians that scare me.
Well, the story about Overlake and Bob Moorhead continues. Would you like a little bit more? A little bit of juicy stuff? It's kind of juicy after this one.
I'm going to have to wrap it up in a little bit, though.
Okay, we've got just let me know. I think we're, about close to an hour. So say 10 more minutes.
That's fine. That's fine. I don't have to cut you short, too. I just wanted you to know that I didn't know how long the rest of it was going to be.
No, actually, actually, 15 more minutes, maybe 10, wherever you feel comfortable, Captain, and we'll wrap it up and do all that.
10 or 15 will be good.
Okay. It goes on. So let's keep in mind of the name of
Bob Moorhead.
Right. Okay. Mm-hmm. Well, and I was, still kind of connected to the church. Well, he had a vacation house in Florida. Which once again, I'm starting to like, what's a preacher got a house, vacation house in Florida? I'm not liking that, right? Well, he was in a public restroom and got caught masturbating in the public restroom with a minor present.
No. Oh, no.
Whoa. Okay. So the church came out and he said he's innocent and the church came out and they're innocent. This big defense, right? Virtue signaling and everything. And literally, he was like, just as we're starting to build this for Christ, the devil's attacking us, right? They would literally use it. So what they did is they set up a big council of all the major churches in Seattle, right?
Wow.
Got an independent investigator for a year-long investigation. They says, books are open. We're innocent. Everything is open. Mm-hmm. We're going to hire this. We're going to set the council up.
Okay.
And there's going to be nothing hidden. So the year went by. The investigation ended it. Overlake Christian Church was like, okay, here's the summary sheet. And the Council of Churches is like, dude, where's the open book? We want to see everything. They're like, no, nothing to see here.
We have thoroughly investigated ourselves and we found we've done nothing wrong.
Exactly. Well, stories are coming out. People are like, when I was getting, when he was baptizing me, he groped me, but I just thought maybe, that's just, He slipped. I don't know. Stories like this. So it comes out the dude that built this thing named Bob Moorhead that went from a regional church to see the Washington's largest church, a super church, right? Turned out to be a perv, man. And they tried to cover it up. And it came. They couldn't hold the truth down. The truth came out. It's just like, oh, that was a big black eye on that new big ass church. So,
and you know what? They deserve whatever they get. Because you know what? It's not not that the crime's bad, but the cover-up is worse.
In the times of the end, there will be many false prophets coming in my name.
Yes, there will.
But we're living in a very exciting time, I think.
We are.
And, if it's the roller coaster.
Not for the faint of heart.
No, it's not. It's not. I just hope that, every day continues to be a blessing that I'm here on the right side of the dirt. I'm employed. I have a roof over my head. Mm-hmm. I have the ability to talk to friends like you across the nation and across the world. Yes. I'm going to, after this, this podcast is over, I'm going to go have me a fat meatball sandwich that I got from the pizza joint right behind my house today. So, I just hope that it lasts. And what my crazy, sometimes conspiratorial thinking is completely wrong, because I would much rather look down the road and say, my God, what was I thinking? How crazy and how loony could I have been and be completely wrong than to have half of what I see coming down the line happen, man.
Here's the thing.
What's that?
I think you're right, and I'm gonna try to how do I spin this? That spin's the wrong word. I'm trying to think how I want to word it.
Yeah, that's the wrong word, but I understand. Everybody else out there understands what you mean.
We are undoubtedly heading into some really, really, really dark times. Yeah, no doubt about it.
I think we are.
I don't know that you and I, because I think you and I are probably, I mean, we're all similar in ages. We're all late Gen Xers.
Yeah, late Gen Xers. I'm 55.
Yeah.
So.
All right. Okay, so I'm 47. All right, so yeah,
well,
but
you're just a kid.
I'm just a kid. Yeah, I say I'm still. I can still say I'm a Gen Xer. Gerald Ford was president when I was born.
Yep.
Not for much longer though. So, we're heading into some really dark shit. I think I'm hoping. I know I'm not going to be alive to see everything perfect and better and all this stuff gone. Mm-hmm. I just hope that I can live long enough to see the point where we realize that humanity is actually going to win. And one way or another, we're gonna defeat these. And I don't know how else to say it, but dark forces, man. You know, but it's going to take a lot of fortitude, and you know, it's going to take a lot of letting go of what we've gotten so used to.
I think so.
You know, the conveniences and the comforts and, mm-hmm. you know, we got to learn once again how to reach out to neighbors and build real community. And, you know, whatever kind of government we need needs to be at the absolute local level. You should be able to go, you're the mayor of your town should think twice about what he or she signs off on. Because he or she knows that if he pisses the people off, they know where he lives.
They do.
And that's the only kind of government that I think is legitimate.
And that they can get rid of him through the ballot mm-hmm. box. It's funny you
they
say
can
that,
do that
because
but they can get rid of him. They can get rid of him through his front door if they want to, because I don't think they're scared of the ballot box anymore. I don't think they're scared of it.
It's the ballot box or the ammo box, you know.
I know.
You don't want to go.
Well,
to
no, there's a soapbox too. There's a soapbox, so we can get on that. We're gonna get on the soapbox, but that's another interesting point.
It's funny.
I was gonna say
that.
What do you?
Because our first guest, Carl Liebold, you know Carl, mm-hmm. He mm-hmm. was talking just about that. I'm not sure if you're listening to the show about
what he's
involved with is Venturian, and their whole message is local. Local organizations, mm-hmm. local governments, local leaders is where yep. we need to put the focus.
Yep.
And mm-hmm. I support that because I think personally here, and we're going to be wrapping it up in a few minutes. I think I've kept it on the line yep. for an hour and 20 minutes now. And the rest of the time here, because we're a little short on the first one, I can always fill out. And I don't think our listeners will mind a bit. But I hope not, at least. But if they do, send me an email, send me a message, hit me on the chat board, and let me know if I'm wrong. But and I forgot what I was saying. Captain, can you remind me? Oh, my God. I went on my soapbox, and I just forgot.
We were talking about local government. We were talking about the only legitimate government is the government that's as local as possible.
Yes, because we all know, and the federal level is – our voice means virtually nothing. You know, I mean, when sleepy, creepy, poopy Uncle Joe, who couldn't get 12 people to a drive-in, got more votes than Obama, who was the Democrats' second coming of Christ.
He was the savior.
He was the savior who would fill up
stadiums
and there'd be people around the block. You're telling me that old cracker who can't remember where the hell he is or, do I need a clean diaper? Got more votes than anybody.
He couldn't even put 100 people at a rally.
No, he couldn't at a high school rally. That's the latest thing.
Right.
That's the president of the United States.
Right. And these are the same people, though. But this is the summer of 2020, so he's supposed to be out campaigning. Right. He can't put 100 people at a rally. But don't tell me it's because of COVID, because this is the same summer that you had people burning down cities all over the damn country.
Right.
So they were obviously going out and about.
Exactly. Exactly. So I'm saying I don't know what is wrong. I can't define it. I can't tell you, but I'm smart enough and been around the block enough to know something rotten in the hen house.
Yeah, we jumped.
I think we all know what that rotten thing is, and it's the fact that our government is no longer the government of the people, but the government of the globalists. But we still have that that part of it that, yes, I think we can still put resistance or make it work, because we still have
mechanisms in this country that the rest of the world doesn't, that are legal, that are legal, that are peaceful, that I'm not talking about. I'm not talking about anything I can't talk about NSA, but we still have constitutional roots. We still have, you know, legal roots in the court systems. You're occasionally, like, you have that judge that in New York that, basically told New York City to stuff their vaccine mandate and to rehire and pay their back pay.
So,
you know, there are good judges out there. And
we have to support. We have to support judges like that. We have to support people who go out and fight for that right, because it's the only hope that we have. And if we give that up, if we lose that, man.
We're pretty close.
Not to be Mr. Tinfoil Hat conspiracy theorist, but man, what the globalists have planned for us that they tell us about. They write books about this stuff is going to make Stalin, Mao, and Hitler, what they did to their people, look through like a walk through the park. And they don't even try to hide it anymore, man.
They're going to – easy bugs. I think they're going to try the Brave New World route, though, in a sense. I think they're going to try the Brave New World route. Now, I don't think it's going to work, but I think they're going to try it, which would basically be to figure out a really good way to drug everybody into submission.
Well, I think so. I mean, ultimately, when I look out at the horizon, I see the transhumanistic movement, where eventually it's going to be a combination of drugs and nanotechnology to where in vitro they will be able to set up a neural network to the machine in vitro. As soon as, you know, you get a zygote, man, those nanotechnologies are in there forming along with the neural system. But, and this is, this sounds crazy to listeners out there that are like, it sounds crazy. This is, once again, go out to Dennis Bushnell. He's the top scientist at NASA, and he talks about this. Go out to Ray Kurzweil. He talks about this. What about who is the trans?
Is it Ray or Ramona?
No, Ray.
Oh,
Ray changed the
what's her name? I know who you're talking about. The trans woman. I cannot think of her name.
Okay. I'm gonna.
I do know who you're talking about.
I'm just gonna do a quick Google search.
I cannot think of what her name is. Well, you know, that's what's kind of...
It is Martine H. Rothblatt. And out of respect, I will call her, but
I'll call her.
When you look at her accomplishments, holy crap. Resume is brilliant. Brilliant. Mm-hmm. And she's wrote a book. It's something along from trans to transhumanism. And these are the levels of minds of the Elon Musk of the world. This is their kind of vision and in some cases religion. And they openly talk about it. You just got to go out and watch their texts and their lectures. They're out there. They're not hiding the stuff.
Musk is another. He's not our friend, guys. I'm the first to admit that I'm getting a kick out of watching him do whatever he's doing with Twitter. So, you know, the enemy of my enemy at this point is my friend. But if anyone really trusts him, don't trust him. Be amused at him, but do not think he is saving you or saving free speech.
No, he's not. He is, if anything, he's a wolf in sheep's clothing.
Oh, yeah. And I think he wants the data. I think he wants the data.
Oh, yeah, he does. I mean... Yeah. You don't get to be at his level to where he had the highest growth of his income out of anybody in the world during the COVID thing or something like that, right? When you look at the net worth of your Bill Gates, your Soros, and him, his just paled. And everyone else just paled in comparison to his.
Yeah.
You know, he's probably the biggest military contractor now with SpaceX and everything like that. And so so you don't get to that level being a nice guy. Rockefeller, Carnegie, right, back in the historic days, didn't get to have fortunes like that. They're a cutthroat. They're a cutthroat, and that's how you get to that level. And so anybody that amasses that much money, no matter how good they smile and they look on camera, like the guy that started Virgin Airlines, you know, those people like that, I'm like, Branson, you don't get to that level unless y'all are cutthroat. Yeah. Bill Gates.
And hey, I'm going to be, you know, I'm going to be honest. I am very much getting a kick out of watching the whole Musk Twitter thing. And it, yes, I giggled and I laughed when he walked in and fired those three nitwits, because it was the nitwit CEO that really, I think that's when he took over, is when Twitter really started to go down the tubes. Cause I remember him making a statement about how it was going to be the nicety and the inclusion and the be mean and blah, 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 blah.
Oh, we're going to give you puppies and Play-Doh if you guys are just
too many participation trophies. Too many participation trophies. Not enough, not enough sit in the bench and, you know, losing.
Yeah, exactly.
Anyway.
Yeah. But I think we have to wrap this up. We've been on the line.
Yes, we do. This was good, though.
It was good. It was really good talking with you, Captain. I really enjoy your time.
You too.
You too.
We'll have to do it again soon.
We will. Anytime I can throw you on, you know I want to throw you on, because you have a good perspective. Everybody out there, just understand that I've known this man for a long time, and I've seen his credentials. And when he talks about things, especially medical, right, this is an expert. So he's not just like me, some dude in California that had a mom for a nurse, right? That they're like, okay, that sounds good. He knows his stuff. So pay attention to him. Pay attention to everything out there. Open your eyes. Understand propaganda. Be well. Have a good night. And Chuck's going to be back once we can get internet and a few things. So everybody else, have a good night. Party on, Captain. We'll talk soon.
All right. You take care, my friend. Good night, everyone.
Night.
Bye-bye.
Take me to task, cause I don't wanna wear a mask or take a vaccine that could maybe make me die. They got no scientific evidence to back that crap up. All they do is feed us lies and lie. That's why I will not comply. Now, since back last March, I've had an achy, breaky heart like old Billy Ray Cyrus. Been catching a case of the blues from the news around this damn coronavirus. Now they're telling us we gotta keep our chin divers up, even if we got the shot in the arm. Nobody's talking about exercise or eating food that's fresh grown from the farm. That's why I will not comply. Trying to take me to task, cause I don't wanna wear a mask or take a vaccine that could maybe make me die. They got no scientific evidence to back that crap up. All they do is feed us lie after lie. That's why I will not comply. Show my non-compliance sounds like
we
made all our lives a total bore. Used to stand united, now we're in a war. It's a culture war. This is crazy. Why can't we stand together? Let's get insane. Forget about skin color and move on, babe.